I'll give it back to you in a minute.
Okay.
Well, you don't have it. I made a photo of it, yeah.
Yes.
I just wanted to see it because I don't have it come before. I just wanted to double check. Oh, that's funny. Well, I'll tell you what it is. We'll go over it again. And again. Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu Mahavishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Page 37, okay. There's the samishti of all the sattvika amshas. So if you can just read that, and then I'll just retranslate that, then we'll go and we'll do the manas, and then on my 38, which none of you have, if you have the little booklet, that will start with the buddhi. Okay, mm-hmm. So just that middle.
And eight there, Sean. From there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or repeat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Etesham,
etesham,
panchatatvanam,
panchatatvanam,
samashti,
samashti,
sattvikam shat,
sattvikam shat,
manobuddhyahankara,
manobuddhyahankara,
chittantakaranani,
chittantakaranani,
Sambhutani.
Sambhutani.
I'll translate that. Just to remind where we are, we had gone through each of the sattvika amshas, right, of the five subtle elements. And the sattvic aspect of each of the five subtle elements will be one sense organs. Like, for instance, for akasha, it'll be shrotra, the sense of hearing. For the vayu, for the wind, it'll be tvak. You know, the sense of touch. For fire, the agni, it'll be the chakshush, it'll be the eyes, etc. So it goes down like that. But now, where we went to is now if we take all five subtle elements together, then it becomes what we call the antakarana, that inner instrument. The antakarana is the inner instrument. They put it in the plural, it could actually just be in the singular, and look at the antakarana as really having able to have four different categories of thoughts. There's the buddhi, we had the only one we've really done so far in terms of It's the manas, the buddhi, the chitta, the ahankara. These are the four. We've only done the manas, and that's on the bottom of your page 37. So the definition of the manas, let's do the manas.
Sankalpa vikalpatmakam. Manaha.
So we talked about this. The nature of the mind is sankalpa vikalpa for the manas. That's the one of the primary. It's a little bit more than this, but if we just take it, the sankalpa vikalpa, atmaka means its nature. The nature of the manas is sankalpa vikalpa. So sankalpa vikalpa atmaka. Sankalpa is I make a resolve or a determination. I have a moment of clarity that is immediately followed by a doubt about that. And so this doubting mind, we call it the doubting mind. You have to realize when you have a doubting mind, you have a doubt. It's about a doubt about something, right? So that something is the sankalpa. I think it's this way. No, I don't think so. Going back and forth back. So that's the nature of the manas. Also, we have to know that, and this is probably not why it's not included in this definition, the manas also receives all the external vrittis, you know, vrittis of sense perception, for instance, and all of the different pramanas we have, the ways for the means of knowledge that we have that give us the experience of this waking state. And so those experiences come through the sense organs to the manas in the form of vrittis. And then the buddhi and the ahankara, you know, will be making a determinative relationship in reference to that vritti. But the manas is the holder of the vrittis. It doesn't have determinative, it doesn't have clarity at all. Either it's doubting, or it's just receiving impressions, or receiving negative emotions, the negative spectrum of emotions. Because as we'll see, if you remember in the panchakosha, the anandamaya kosha, that kosha which is made of these happy vrittis, basically. Those happy vrittis are because there's a resolution in the mind that gives a shanta vritti, and then I experience different forms of ananda because of the variances within the shanta vritti. But that shanta vritti, even though it gives me moments of happiness, we say it's an anandamaya kosha, because the ananda is just really a reflection or vritti ananda, which means it's going to be wonderful, it's going to be varied in terms of its quality, in terms of its intensity, but the worst part of it is that it's temporary. And so you have these ananda vrittis and you think, oh, this is wonderful. Or say it's just one that's just a nice, smooth, gentle ananda vritti. This is me, this is how I'm supposed to be, you know, but it's only a vritti. And that vritti goes away. So the experience of that level of ananda that's variegated, and that, you know what I mean by variegated? Like we have many words for ananda, love, joy, compassion, sympathy, just the whole friendliness. We have many, many words, bliss, you know, fun loving. We have many different words for experiences of sukha, experiences of happiness. Those are all variegated levels of relaxation, you know, in the shanta vritti. And so we have names for all of these little different modifications, little different, you know, modifications within the shanta vritti, but it still remains the shanta vritti. So we have all of these names for it. So the shanta vritti is where I experience the shanta vritti is just by nature of being a shanta vritti. They reflect myself, you know, so there's a resonance with that vritti and me. So I feel very much at home. But when the shanta vrittis are displaced by different, the variegated forms of dukkha vrittis, then I feel relatively and as though on a continuum, different levels of isolation, different levels of unhappiness, different levels of agitation, and we have many names for all of these things too. And so we like the part of the continuum from dukkha to sukha. We like the sukha part of these type of vrittis, the sukha vrittis, because they resonate with my nature and I feel at home with myself. You know, but these vrittis are vrittis. They are all products of maya. They come into being and go out of being. And so as pleasing as they are, the Buddha would call them, they're all dukkha yonis. They all, because they go. And then I lose that resonance, that sense of well-being that they provide, because the shanti resonates with the ananda, or the fullness of my own nature. So this is why we have this anandamaya kosha. The anandamaya kosha, as well as the negative experiences that are held in the manas, make you into a mumukshu, because both are dukkha, you know. In fact, I mentioned when you have the ananda, and you have these ananda vrittis, because you know, because of beginningless lifetimes of experience, that vritti is temporary. That your buddhi cannot but let you know that. It's just this silent understanding, this silent abiding understanding underneath the sukha vritti, which is, this isn't going to last. And so there's this kind of underlying sadness that is there with the sukha vritti also. And then that truth fulfills itself, and then there's suffering because you no longer are yourself, feeling yourself anymore. That's kind of how it works. So the manomaya is not having ashanta vritti. It's not a variegation of ashanta vritti. It has to do with stress and memories and the unconscious rising up, being triggered by your unhappy circumstances that you had when you were a child, being triggered by your circumstances here. It's called projection, and it's all these feelings and things are made to rise up in reference to your experience. Those are where we call really different forms of dukkha, of suffering, different forms of suffering. Those are all held in the manas, which is really a blessing, because even though they're held in the manas doesn't really do much with them other than experience them. Just like it experiences sense perception, right? The vrittis that are born of sense perception, it also experiences the things that rise from the unconscious. It will experience the citta, also the memories. So we put that in a different category. But they're not something which are actors in them from their own standpoint. They're just vrittis that are acted upon by the buddhi. By acted upon means, like, say, in the manas arises this dukkha vritti, this suffering, this sorrow, or this depression, or this agitation, or some one of its the negative type of experiences, negative types of emotion. The buddhi now, depending upon its knowledge, either its self-knowledge or its psychological understandings. The buddhi is knowledge, remember. The buddhi can come into relationship with that manas in a healing way. That is what's so fabulous. That's why we can, because the buddhi has knowledge and it comes into relationship with all of these other types of vrittis that are really just experiential. They're not doing much except causing you pain, or they're causing you a remembrance and these type of things. But the buddhi, which is innermost in terms, the most subtle, in terms of these different types of modifications that the mind is capable of, it's the buddhi that can do something about it. It can talk to it. It can understand it. It can contain it. It can have a subject-object relationship with it. That's amazing, that we can have a subject-object relationship with these emotions, and then behave toward them in a way that is curative. It's exactly the same as we'll see as we do more and more of these guided meditations that are around Antakarana Shuddhi. We'll see more and more how even the buddhi that has knowledge, for a mumukshu who is gaining knowledge, a jnani, you have atmajnanam to whatever point of clarity you have it. That knowledge itself is very useful in engaging with your own emotions. Or, I would like to say it like this, engaging in the emotions that are projected onto the other person. We think we're engaging with the other person, but really we're we're engaging with the emotional creation, the emotional product that has been produced by the coming together of these two people. A product has been produced, and I am engaging with that emotional product. Well, another way I can say it is that in this relationship between your friend or enemy, or whoever, your partner, whoever it may be, your child, in this relationship, you know, the other will, I mean, so many psychology books have been written on this, I guess. The other, the partner, the close friend, the child, will trigger, you know, emotions that we're holding inside from our own experiences. You know, like say there's a, you have your own, all of us, everyone, without exception, we have some sort of mother-child relationship, internal relationship. We have a, it's big, in fact, because how many years, in these very formative years, what, the only thing that really exists for you are your parents. They're the devatas. They are your world, you know. And especially those first, you know, 3 years, Jung has said, in those first 3 years, you spend your whole life, you know, working through that. All of us. Because so many internal structures are formed at that time. You know, and so we have a lot of trauma and a lot of things that the poor parents did not do exactly as the little child needed. That's why... Winnicott says, you know, you're not going to be perfect. Forget that one. Just be good enough. You have to be a good enough mother. Good enough mother, good enough father, and your children will turn out just fine. Because there's no possibility of, you'd have to be like, they would have to be a total appendage to you so that your mind and their mind were one, and your mind decides to raise the hand, and so the hand is raised. So your mind decides to that you need a bottle right now, and so a bottle immediately appears. You know, there is a little distance, even though there's so much chemistry is taking place between the parents and the child. There's still a little bit distance. You might not get that bottle the instant they need it. You know, these creations, but those little rifts we find are also healthy for the child's development. That's why good enough is good enough, truly. It's not good enough, your child will just be a little bit damaged. That's not what it's meant at all. It's like, if it's good enough, you know, if it's good enough, your child actually benefits from things not always just being perfect. Like Jagadisha would say, you know, it's not Swargaloka here, you know. Things are not perfect. There's little rifts here and there. Your desires are not immediately fulfilled, and so that gives strength actually to the child and to the child mother child father child relationship. Strength is given to the child, you know, because those things don't really matter. There's this little rift, but mommy still loves me. You know, I didn't get my bottle right in time, but my mommy still loves me. My daddy still loves me. I don't have to always get everything the way I want, and they still love me. So there's a structure that's formed in there that is really very important. But there's areas where the trauma was a little bit too much in our lives, and in that case, especially when you're young, your defense system says, "Oops, this is too much." Lock the door. It's taken inside and held in the unconscious. Because your little mind, little child mind, can't handle that situation. And so your defense system takes over, holds it down there until you grow up, and then you can go and take care of that. When you have an adult mind, then that adult mind can go and have a relationship with those little ones and work through all of that, and they can overcome that trauma and all of the pain and suffering that was held inside until that point. Can be released, and the energy, that psychic energy that has been swallowed, kind of is released into the conscious mind, and you become fine. So Winnicott, also this very well-known for psychologists, very known psychologist who said about the good enough mother, you know. When he's working with adults who have these little child traumas inside to more, whatever degree, you know, sometimes the client is afraid to go in and do that work because they don't think they can handle it because they had some really difficult times in their childhood. So they're afraid to go back in, you know, and he'll say something like, you could handle it when you were two. You could handle it now. You didn't have a breakdown when you were two. You won't have a breakdown now. It's a really beautiful piece of advice, piece of understanding. For us who have self-knowledge, you could say, you know what? No matter how hard it is, you know, yourself is there. And yourself is not going to break down. The one thing that will never break down in any way or change in any way is your being. So we have that, a safety net that most people don't have when they're doing this work. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a safety net. And just a little aside there, psychologically speaking, if there's something that seems too scary for you right now, then don't do it right now. But you can talk to the defense system, you know, that's stopping you from going in to work on those type of painful things and say, you can say, if you really don't believe that I can handle this right now, it's like telling Bhagwan, you know, but I want this, but if you don't think it's good for me, okay, I trust you. Okay, so you can tell the defense system, I think we can handle this now. But if you're pretty convinced it's not the right time, we'll just wait and we'll do it later. You know? That's a nice thing to do. It's respectful. So anyway, I'm going to bring this back in to the oneness, holding the negative emotions, you know, coming up, rising up from the unconscious. Your buddhi is able to hold that. And that's one of the beautiful things about the buddhi. So the definition, the next one that's on the page you don't have, just repeat after me. Nischaya.
Nischaya.
Atmika.
Atmika.
Buddhihi.
Buddhihi.
Nischaya Atmika Buddhihi.
Nischaya Atmika Buddhihi.
So nischaya means that firmness, that resolve, that knowledge, clarity. So the buddhi is what the one whose nature is that, who has that firmness, that clarity of mind, the one who is holding knowledge. And that can come, and the knowledge that the buddhi has can come into interaction with all experiences. But all, of course, all experiences, internal and external, are really taking place, you know, in the manas, in the antakarana. So that's the buddhi. The next one is the ahankara. So it says, ahankarta.
Ahankarta.
Ahankritihi.
Ahankritihi.
So the ahankarta is like saying the ahankara, but the ahankarta is the one who takes myself to be the doer. You know, I am the doer, I am the knower, I am the seer, I am the one who is engaged in this world. That's the aham itself is taken to be a karta. Karta comes from kartra, you know. So I am the karta means that I have superimposed my being onto all of my faculties, you know. I am the one who is breathing. I am the breather, you know. I am the one who digests my food. I am this physical body that does all of these things. I am the one who moves my hands. I am the karta of everything, whether it be the sense organs, I am the seer, hearer, doer, or it be your organs of action, or it's your relationships. I am the one who is having this relationship. I am in relationship with this person. I am the one who is the teacher or the student, this ER, you know, teacher, student, you know, worker, whatever it happens to be. That ER is the karta. So that total identification on this part of my mind with my body, mind, sense organs, and all of the things it does, I am the doer of that, the doer, seer. So that's what we call the ahankara. Another way to think about it is that Because I, the Atma, remains unknown to the mind, experienced but unknown to the mind, right? Because it doesn't have a means of knowledge, or, oh, this is what I am. It only experiences myself, my self-evident conscious being, as itself. And it experiences it because of the sattva guna. You know, the lamp here is not experiencing itself as a lamp, right? So I'm saying, I am a lamp, and nobody's turning me on. I'm not turning you on because it's not dark yet. When it's dark, I will turn you on. Okay. No, it's not. It's not. It just simply, it can be known from Bhagawan's standpoint. It's also known from our standpoint. It is known, but it doesn't have a sukshma sharira, you know, to take that has the mind, you know, the antakarana, the sattva, and the sattva sense organs to reflect the consciousness to be able to say, I am that. Because if it can say, I am that, that one that says, I am that, that's the ahankara. That means that as long as I have a subtle body that's enlivening this physical body, so this physical body enjoys consciousness, that consciousness I take to be that physical body. My mind takes to be the physical body. So I say, I am this body. This is who I am. This is what I look like. I am a woman, or I am a man. You know, whatever this body is, I am such and such an age. That's the ahankara. Because why should the mind not say that? Because I am the conscious being, this body is enduring consciousness. I am the conscious being, this mind enjoys consciousness. So of course, mitya mind, which has no being of its own, enjoys the sat-chit-atma 100%. So what it's saying is absolutely true. It's not like it's making something up, like there's some pretend consciousness. There's some pretend me out there that the mind is identifying with. No. The mind is identifying with me, the one who is Brahman, because of Ajnanam, you know. And so when it says I am, that I am is actually landing on the Atma, on the self. But it's landing on the self through the filter of the mind. And so it's the mind that is saying, I am the self. I am the conscious being. And so this creates, because of ignorance, what we call an anyonya adhyasa. Adhyasa means superimposition. Anyonya means other, it means mutual. There's a mutual superimposition that takes place. And what they mean by mutual here is this. The mind says, you know, I am the conscious being. And when it says that, then the I'm the self, okay? I am the self. I mean the conscious being, the me, the Atma. I am the self. That means that from its vantage point, the mind's vantage point, you know, the mind itself is the conscious being. And so that's one side. So the mind becomes the conscious being, the self. And the self, on the other side, the anyonya, so the mind becomes the self. And the self becomes the mind. And so that means the self takes on all of the qualities of the mind. When the mind is unhappy, the self is unhappy. When the mind is agitated, the self is agitated. When the mind is stupid, the self is stupid. Whatever thing the mind is going on, when the mind is remembering, the self is remembering. You know? When the mind is making a decision, the self is making a decision. So whatever the qualities of the mind, the four categories of the mind, whatever takes place, those are my qualities. So that's the mutual. The mind takes itself to be the self, and then the self gains all of the qualities. That's what we mean by this anyonya, adhyasa. And so in the ahankara, this ahankara, because of the ajnanam, is a given. You know, there's nothing wrong that there's an ahankara there. It's just, there's nothing wrong, like nobody did a bad deed, you know, that all of a sudden you have an ahankara. You are ignorant. You ignorant person, you have an ahankara. But the ajnanam is beginningless until it's removed. So the ahankara is inevitable. The only thing is that with the beauty about ajnanam or ignorance is that it's beginningless, but it comes to an end with knowledge. And here in this case, the ahankara becomes, as long as you have this body, mind, sense organs, the ahankara becomes mithya. When you recognize the satya-mithya relationship between the self and maya, this body, mind, sense organs all are part of maya. They're all part of the total Ishvara Upadhi, they themselves, Ishvara Upadhi itself is maya, the ajnanam is maya, so this body, mind, sense organs is maya, and the ajnana itself is maya, and that means as soon as you say maya, it's mithya. When you realize that it's mithya, then in reality, there's nothing here but myself. Just remember wood desk. The desk is nothing but wood. All of these upadis are not, they're mithya, they are nothing but me. So experientially there's no mistake. The mistake is an innocent mistake on the part of mithya, because actually I am totally 100% its self. What it doesn't know, it cannot know without, it has the experience, but it cannot know without a means of knowledge. So what it can know, it does know, that I am the self. Because that is true. It's like the desk saying, I am the wood. And what if I were to say, you are not the wood. I am to the wood. Don't tell me I'm not the wood. I am the wood. And they're correct. So what if somebody tells you, talking to your body, you are not, you are not the self. That is actually very confusing, and it's also completely incorrect. It's completely incorrect, because in fact, you are the self. What you don't realize is that the self is free of all of the upadis. Completely free. Not limited in any way by the conditioning adjuncts, whether it be the body or the mind or the sense organs. It is completely free. That's not true for the mind. If I were to pull the self away, then there is no mind. There's no existence, there's no consciousness, you know. So the satya mithya, it doesn't understand, you know. All it knows is, here I am, and I am a conscious being. Yeah. And that is true. But it doesn't understand the satya mithya relationship, you know, to, which changes the nature of that experience. It changes the understanding of that experience, and it frees your being from all of the changes that this incredible mithya maya goes through. So that's an important understanding. So here, ahankarata ahankritihi, is the ahankara. The third one, repeat after me, or have we done? No, the fourth one, because we've done the sankalpa vikalpa, atmaka manaha, then we've done the buddhi, we've done the ahankara, now chintana kartra. Chintana kartra.
Chittam.
Chittam.
The chitta is the one who does recollection. Now the word chintana, it actually has the sense of recollecting something, thinking over something, cogitating on something. But here, it's that thinking over or recollecting in the form of what happened before. So when we say chitta and chintana karta, it's the one who's doing that recollecting. But the chitta, the actual chitta, are the memories that are coming up through that process of recollection. So the chitta are, we can just say, the chitta is your memories, but you have access to those memories. Like if I ask you what you had for breakfast, that's not happening right now. But you can recollect that. So that's the chintana karta. It's kartra, is just the substantive of kartra. So the action of recollecting, of recollecting, of, so remembrance. So sometimes we just say memories. So now it's gone through these four categories of the antakarana. We've done that. Now we're going to kind of move on to, what time is it? Oh, we have 12. We have 12:30, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, we did 12:30. Okay. Sorry, I got confused. Yes, no. Okay. Now we are just going to move on to who is the devata of each one of these. In other words, how is Ishwara related to each one of these capacities? So the devata in reference to the manas, the devata in reference to the buddhi, etc., because that connects us with Ishwara. It's like if I think of my eyes, the devata for the eyes is Surya, because in the creation, Surya lights up the creation, and with my eyes, I get to see the creation. So you can, some of them, you really know the relationship very clearly. You can understand the relationship. Sometimes you have to think about it or find out from somebody. So here, repeat after me. That's what we're doing. Manasaha.
Manasaha.
Devata.
Devata.
Chandramaha.
Chandramaha.
So manas, if I do this with the Sunday, manaso devata.
Manaso devata.
Chandramaha.
Chandramaha.
Manasaha.
Manasaha.
Devata.
Devata.
Chandramaha.
Chandramaha.
So manasaha, sixth case, manasaha, manasaha devata, the devata for the mind is the moon, chandramaha, not the physical moon, the devata of the moon. So why would that be? You know, the moon is, Swamiji in his commentary on this book, he says, you know, in your Jyotisha, in your astrology chart, they always look at the moon to see where it is placed, and you know how fuller it is, and that will show, really have a lot to do with kind of the strength of your mind, the placement of the moon. So the moon is continually changing, you know. And what if it's in depending upon where in the chart it is. Because the moon by nature is changing, the manas by nature is continually changing. So where is it in the chart, in your chart? Is the moon afflicted, you know? Or is it supported? What is the relationship of the sun to the moon? You know, because the moon is the devata of the mind, and you can see what they have in common. They're both changing, and they're both reflecting the sun. So sun, sometimes we'll see when we do the buddhi next, sometimes the devata for the buddhi is the sun. In this case, it's not the sun, it's Brahmaji. But often it is the sun. And then you can see that sun-moon relationship in terms of the sun being so strong and definite, you know, and it's shining its light. But the moon is something that is dependent upon the sun, really, you know, and it is continually changing. That's kind of interesting. So let's look at the devata for the buddhi. Here it just where it says, where am I? Manasaha devata chandramaha. Then buddhehe.
Buddhehe.
Brahma.
Brahma.
Without the sandhi, buddher.
Brahma.
Buddher. Buddher. Right. Buddhehe. That goes to Repha, right? Buddhera, Buddhera Brahma. So Buddhehi Brahma. For the buddhi, the devata is Brahma. Brahma means Brahmaji. Because Brahmaji, in the Srishti Stiti Laya, the Srishti is the coming into creation, the Stiti is the sustaining the creation, and then the Laya is the dissolution of the creation. Brahmaji is the deva that is related to the coming, bringing the creation. And so Brahmaji is considered the creative one and also the one who has sankalpa. Because if Brahmaji brings this creation into being, that aspect of Ishwara, there has to be a strong sankalpa there. Can't be, should I bring it into creation or not? It can't be like that. There has to be a strong sankalpa, and it's also very creative. So the creativity, the intelligence, all belongs to the buddhi. So here, they say buddhehe brahma, brahmas brahmaji. The next one is ahankarasya rudraha.
Ahankarasya rudraha.
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 So for the ahankara, rudra. Why does rudra, Swamiji didn't comment on that. I can probably find that somewhere. I need if I have a Sanskrit, what do you call it, a commentary on this, but offhand He didn't comment on it, and I don't really know either. Why is the Ahamkara Rudra? Maybe it's because in the actual commentary of the Rudra, the chant, long chant that we learn, there is an etymology given for Rudra. I don't remember it in Sanskrit, but I remember it in English. Rudra means the one who causes tears, and as well as the one who removes the tears. And so if you have an ahankara, which in this case that you do, you know, what you identify with, what you're identifying with, because ahankara means like that identification, can cause you tears, can also remove the tears. So that's an interesting interpretation. In fact, I don't know if we have Swamiji's Rudra here. It's a really beautiful book. Anybody have it here? No, we don't have it. He goes into a beautiful, there at the very beginning of his book on the Rudra, he goes into a whole etymology of Rudra and then talks a lot about its placement in the scheme of things in terms of the Vedas. You know, but there's also a famous Sanskrit commentary we use, and that Swamiji also uses, that breaks down the etymology of this. So, Rudra is the devata for the deva for the ahankara. And then chittasya. Vasudevaha.
Vasudevaha.
So Vasudeva, Vasudeva is the devata. Vasudeva is Vishnu. So Vasudeva is the deva for the chitta, for the memory. So Vasudeva Vishnu is also in terms of the Srishti Stiti Laya, the one who sustains the creation. So it's interesting that Vasudeva or Vishnu is the one who sustains the memory, or you know, is the one who holds all of those memories in place. You can look like that. Okay. So Swamiji doesn't comment on that, but you can also think about it, contemplate on it. Vishnu, how would Vishnu be, you know, the one who's the deva for the memory, and understanding his place in the scheme of things. You've got Brahmaji, Vishnu, and Shiva. In terms of the Srishti, the creation, is Brahmaji, the sustenance of the creation, the stiti, you know, is Vasudeva, and then the laya is Shiva, Rudra, actually. So Rudra is a form of Shiva. Okay, so those are the devatas, which really all of our capacities, if we can understand the relationship of all of the capacities that we have to Ishwar. What part of Ishwar, what are the laws of Ishwar that are allowing for or enabling all of the capacities that we have? Because we are part of Ishwar. It's just like, just think of your dream. If you have a dream and you're identified with a character, everything about that character, its beings, and its capacities is totally interwoven and dependent upon the entire dream. In no way can you extricate it from the dream. It's part and parcel of the entire dream and all of the laws that run warp and woof through the dream. And so that's our condition here. There's nothing about us or any of our qualities or gunas or attributes or anything that is in any way separate from the whole. And so what parts of Ishwar, what are the laws, what is the order, what are the devatas? Think of each devata or deity as the one who is looking after all of the laws, is responsible for any given law. Swamiji said, actually, that being the case, there are countless infinite devatas, if you look at each law being one devata. But now we're looking at kind of the major ones in terms of those that relate to these major functions in reference to our body. So we makes us recognize that actually there's nothing about us that is other than Ishwara, other than or away from in any way from Ishwara, from the laws of Ishwara. So with that, repeat after me. Ete sham.
Ete sham.
Panchatattvanam.
Panchatattvanam.
Madhye.
Madhye.
Akashasya.
Akashasya.
Rajasa.
Rajasa.
Amshat.
Amshat.
Vagindriya.
Vagindriya.
Sambhutam.
Sambhutam.
So this says, you know, among these five panchatattvas, the five subtle elements, what is born from the Rajas Amsha, from Rajas? What is born from the Rajas element of these five subtle elements? And so he says, Rajas Amshat Vak Indriya, he gets the first, the Vak Indriya is born, so of, among all of the five elements, the subtle, all of the five subtle elements, among those, for the element, from the element of space, so like this, Akashasya Rajasa Amshat, from the Rajas aspect of space, the first of the elements, space, air, fire, water, earth, the Akasha, from the Rajas element of the Akasha, Vak, the Vak Indriya, Karmendriyas, Vak, speech is born. It makes sense. So if the Akasha, the Sattva element, is hearing, the Rajas element is speech, right? Makes sense. So, Rajasa Amshat Vakindriyam Sambhutam. And so now it's going to go through and tell us what each one of these from the Akasha to the Vayu to the Agni to the Rasana and to the Prithvi, from each one of these subtle elements, which Indriya is born. So we're just going to read through these and then we're done. Repeat after me. So now we're going to go into Vayu. Vayoho.
Vayoho.
Rajasa Amshat.
Rajasa Amshat.
Pani Indriyam.
Pani Indriyam.
Sambhutam.
Sambhutam.
So remember the sattva aspect of Vayu is the sense of touch, right? Hands are the Rajas, which is kind of in, you can say hands move through space, but also hands, you know, are so fundamental in terms of the sense of touch, even though it runs through the whole body, okay? So then the hands, Pani, you know, Pani means hands, is the Rajas aspect of Vayu, of the wind. Now, Vanne, Vannehe, Rajasa Amshat,
Rajasa
Amshat. Pada Indriyam.
Sambhutam. Sambhutam.
The Indriya, the Karma Indriya, Pada, the feet, are born from the Rajas aspect of Vanne. Vanne is another word for fire. Because fire moves quickly along the ground. Make up your own reason. There are certain very simple kind of interesting logics. Fire moves along the ground, feet move along the ground. Hands move up in the air, you know, and the wind is in the air is above. So you can look like that. Yeah. Just think about it. It's good for some kind of nididhyasana, just kind of make a connection. Okay, what about water? Jalasya.
Jalasya.
Rajasa Amshat.
Rajasa Amshat.
Guda Indriyam.
Sambhutam.
So the karmendriya for the born of the Rajas element of water is the Guda. Guda means the organ of excretion, of evacuation. So that becomes the indriya of water. And then prithivyaha. Rajasa Amshat.
Rajasa Amshat.
Upasta Indriyam.
Upasta Indriyam.
Sambhutam.
Sambhutam.
So, from the Rajas aspect of Prithivi, the earth, then what is the Karma Indriya, the organ of action that is born? Upasta. Upasta, you can say the genitals, but actually, and we do use it like that, the genitals are born from the Prithivi. It also means the womb, which is interesting. So. The womb is the meaning for upasta. They don't, if you look up upasta, they don't say really the sexual act or genitals or anything. They say joining, that's some sense of joining, and then the womb is there also. So upasta, not upasta. So it's just interesting. But in the context, what they're talking about from just all of the other associations that we have in this context. It's the organs of sexuality, the genitals. So then now it says, Etesham,
Etesham,
Samashti Raja,
Samashti Raja,
Rajasa Amshat,
Rajasa Amshat,
Samashti Rajasa Amshat,
Samashti Rajasa Amshat,
Panchapranaha,
Panchapranaha,
Sambhutaha,
Sambhutaha.
Okay, now it says, the Rajasa, the Sameshti Rajasa Amsha means all of the Sameshti means all of them, from all of the five elements. The Rajas aspect of all of the five elements together, the five subtle elements together, makes for the five pranas, the Pancha pranas, which we've already been through, so they're not going to list them again. So where the five elements, the five subtle elements of all of the five sattva aspects, of all of the five subtle elements is going to be the antakarana, the mind. The five rajas elements altogether will be the five pranas. Singularly, they're the organs of action. Singularly, for the sattva aspect, they're the jnanendriyas, the sense organs. You know, you've got, with going through the tamas, the sattva and the rajas together, you've covered the association, how this comes about with in terms of the five subtle elements. You know how the karma, the pancha, the jnanendriyas come about, the sense organs, and the karmendriyas, the organs of action. And then collectively, the sattva is the antakarana, and its four aspects. Collectively, for the rajas, it's the five pranas. Okay. And so we'll just translate this sentence, and then we have to do this, but we'll translate the sentence. Okay. And we have to go to the next one, which we'll do in the next class. Etesham,
Etesham,
Panchatattvanam,
Panchatattvanam,
Tamasa Amshat,
Tamasa Amshat,
Panchikrita,
Panchikrita,
Panchatattvani,
Panchatattvani,
Bhavanti.
Bhavanti.
It says, from the tamas amsha of the five elements. The tamas part of all of the five elements, those five parts, the tamas five parts of the tamas, those five have to go through the process of becoming fivefold. And so, and that process is called Panchikrita, Panchatattvani, Bhavanti. So the five Panchatattvas, the five, so the Amsha, the Tamas Amsha part of the five subtle elements, they have to go through this process of Panchikarana in order to become the Stura Sharira, actually, become the physical world. So that will be the next page, 42, and we'll work on that next class.
Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
Good for us.